Aqua, New York. Again, thank you for joining us and to spend your time with us again. And see you next time here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Laura from Hudson at the Hudson Farmers Market. You're listening to WGXC Acra 90.7 FM hands-on radio.
WGXC has a new call-in number for anyone to leave a three-minute message that we will play back on the air. Listeners can leave as many three-minute audio letters to the editor at 518-212-7509 as they want, and WGXE will let your voice be heard on the local airwaves. The number again to call in and record a three-minute message that will be played back on 90.7 FM is 518-212-7509.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of David White of Greenville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
Take your Wellingtons off, children, and Mammy will tell you a pleasant story.
Good evening. This is Foraging Ahead, and I'm Kevin Factor.
And I'm Ben Hale.
Tonight on Foraging Ahead, parodies, satire, imitation, forgery, and homage. This actually sort of came about, Ben, as I was reading the paper a while back, not too long ago, and there was a big kerfluffle about an AI writing and producing and singing, I guess, a Drake song.
Right.
That got like a half a million downloads on Spotify or some other streaming services, I guess. And there's a big panic, and obviously they took it down, and you can't get it now. And it's, I was like, oh, we just don't know what is real anymore.
Right.
You know, and sometimes not knowing what's real is kind of fun.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, satire has been around as long as probably people.
I'm sure it has, yeah.
You know,
in
you
some
know,
form.
Some schmo telling a story around the you know, the fire, and then, you know, 10 minutes later, somebody's just mocking him.
Well, yeah. And you know, one of my favorite examples of early satire or something, I don't know, but there's a an ancient Neolithic you know, a pictograph or something like that on a rock somewhere in the same area of like, you know, southern France and northern Spain where the Lascaux Caves are, where there are a lot of amazing examples of Neolithic art. And it's a picture that pretty clearly depicts a man in coitus with what appears to be a goat.
Is that
and,
right?
Yes, and many archaeologists have poured their racked their brains about this, wondering like, was this a very common occurrence? But one of the voices that is my favorite in this debate among the archaeologists, which is, it's totally possible that this could have been a joke then. Right.
I'm gonna go with that for sure. I'm gonna go with that. I mean, we that predates literature. I mean, the earliest sort of satires we have go back to the Greeks, I think.
Yeah, Aristophanes.
Lysistrata, is that?
The Lysistrata. The Symposium.
Yeah.
Pardon me, not the Symposium, the Clouds. Mm-hmm. Every Aristophanes play that I know of is a satire of something.
Right, right. So, yeah, I mean, from Aristophanes through, like... Mm-hmm. The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Human beings have just loved satire and parody. Mm-hmm. So, but before we move forward, let's define parody as opposed mm-hmm. to satire.
Well, I think parody is kind of a direct spoof on something. Mm-hmm. Like you're making fun of something really specific,
mm-hmm. yeah.
whereas satire is more general.
Yeah. And probably more of a critique.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I think a parody, you could do a parody as an homage, mm-hmm. right, as something, you know.
Well, yeah, you can. A parody can definitely be an homage. I think most good parodies are homages of some kind. You know, it's, earlier we were talking about This is Spinal Tap, and which is a satire containing a bunch of parodies.
Yeah.
One of my favorite of which is a pretty direct parody of really early Rolling Stones, where it goes, give me some money.
Sadly, we don't have that one.
Oh,
but
we have several
yeah. other Spinal Tap.
Yeah, but it's clearly done by people who genuinely love the early Rolling Stones.
You have to understand mm-hmm. to do a good parody. Yep.
Absolutely.
So like this Drake kerfluffle.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, I wouldn't know if it was a good mimicry of Drake or a bad mimicry because I simply don't know Drake. I wouldn't know a parody
of
Drake.
The kind of like terrifying thing is that I think it fooled a lot of Drake fans.
Oh, yeah. Well, 500,000 of them.
Right.
Right. But I don't know how discerning they are.
Right.
So that's the thing. But it got some music critics as well. But mm-hmm. So before we jump into our parody songs, and there are some songs that are satires that mm-hmm. sort of mock conventions. I mean,
right.
In literature, we certainly have Huckleberry Finn,
yeah.
right? Adventures of Huckleberry Finn.
Well,
we have Candide. We
right.
have Dickens. Mm-hmm. We also have, obviously, Joseph Heller.
Right.
Jane Austen even wrote a brilliant parody of a gothic thriller.
Huh. But, I haven't read that. What's the Jane Austen parody?
Oh, gosh. It's a total parody of sort of the House of Udolpho or something like that, which was an early...
I'd kind of like to read that.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually... It's quite funny.
You know, there's the difference between Horatian and Juvenalian satire.
Well, all right, but we're going to keep this decidedly middle brow.
Okay. It's really interesting if we have time for it.
Horatian and Juvenalian.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So they're satire, not parody.
I guess we're going to hear the difference.
Okay, you want to hear it? I can stop if you want. But it's interesting. So okay, so
go on.
So there were these two Latin poets, Horace, that you've probably heard of.
Yes, and Juvenal.
And Juvenal, yeah. And Horatian satire is not pointed. It's not angry. It's Horatian satire is kind of like The Simpsons, like the the feeling. Or this is Spinal Tap. The feeling in Horatian satire is like we're all kind of dupes in this silly world together. Whereas Juvenalian satire is angry and pointed
and juvenile.
Well, Juvenal. Yeah, Juvenalian satire is more like thank you for smoking or. South Park is more like Juvenalian satire.
Mm.
You know, it's
pointed.
It's pointed.
Pointed. And a critique of social norms.
Juvenalian satire has a target, specific target that it's making fun of.
Right. Well, I think let's start with a little poetry before we get into the music parodies.
Sure.
The most parodied poem, I think, in the English language, or anyway, the American poetry scene is William Carlos Williams.
Yes, William Carlos Williams, one of his most famous poems. This is just to say, I have eaten the plums that were in the icebox and which you were probably saving for breakfast. Forgive me, they were delicious, so sweet and so cold.
Mm. Now, Kenneth Koch, and I'm going to pronounce it Koch and not Coke.
Right. I'm not sure exactly how you're supposed to pronounce it.
But I'm going to pronounce Kenneth Koch, a very great American poet in his own right, also taught poetry to children. And he used that poem as a template, and he himself wrote a parody of the poem. But he used it to teach children how to write poetry. And he had them all parody that particular poem. Uh-huh. And it is now apparently what is called a meme.
That's funny.
On the internet. But do you have Kenneth Koch's parody of it? Yeah.
Variations on a Theme by William Carlos Williams by Kenneth Koch or Koch. I chopped down the house that you had been saving to live in next summer. I am sorry, but it was morning and I had nothing to do, and its wooden beams were so inviting. We laughed at the hollyhocks together, and then I sprayed them with lye. Forgive me, I simply do not know what I am doing. I gave away the money that you had been saving to live on for the next 10 years. The man who asked for it was shabby, and the firm March wind on the porch was so juicy and cold. Last evening we went dancing, and I broke your leg. Forgive me, I was clumsy, and I wanted you here in the wards, where I am the doctor. And then there's Walt Whitman's. Well, this is more of a satire, more of an homage, you know, or Allen Ginsberg's homage to Walt Whitman. Would you like to hear the original first?
Sure. Let's keep it in.
Okay. This is one of the most famous passages from Leaves of Grass. I hear America singing. I hear America singing. The varied carols I hear. Those of mechanics, each one singing his as it should be, blithe and strong. The carpenter singing his as he measures his plank or beam. The mason singing his as he makes ready for work or leaves off work. The boatman singing what belongs to him in his boat. The deckhand singing on the steamboat deck. The shoemaker singing as he sits on his bench. The hatter singing as he stands. The woodcutter's song, the plowboy is on his way in the morning, or at noon intermission, or at sundown. The delicious singing of the mother, or of the young wife at work, or of the girl sewing or washing, each singing what belongs to him or her, and to no one else. The day what belongs to the day. At night the party of young fellows, robust, friendly, singing with open mouths their strong, melodious songs. And this.
Wow. Rousing.
Yeah.
Rousing. Yeah.
What a great poem.
He was all right, that Whitman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there's just this boundless optimism of Walt Whitman. I love it.
We need a little of that.
Yeah, I know. And this is Allen Ginsberg's homage to Walt Whitman, A Supermarket in California. Do you mind if I do an Allen Ginsberg impression?
I don't.
Okay. What thoughts I have of you tonight, Walt Whitman. For I walked down the side streets under the trees with a headache of self-conscious looking at the full moon. In my hungry fatigue and shopping for images, I went into the neon fruit supermarket, dreaming of your enumerations. What peaches and what penumbras. Whole families shopping at night. Aisles full of husbands. Wives in the avocados. Babies and the tomatoes. And you, Garcia Lorca, what were you doing down by the watermelons? I saw you, Walt Whitman, childless, lonely old grubber, poking among the meats in the refrigerator and eyeing the grocery boys. I heard you asking questions of each. Who killed the pork chops? What price bananas? Are you my angel? I wandered in and out of the brilliant stacks of cans following you, and followed in my imagination by the store detective. We strode down the open corridors together in our solitary fancy-tasting artichokes, possessing every frozen delicacy and never passing the cashier. Where are we going, Walt Whitman? The doors close in an hour. Which way does your beard point tonight? I touch your book and dream of our odyssey in the supermarket and feel absurd. Will we walk all night through solitary streets? The streets add shade to shade. Lights out in the houses. We'll both be lonely. Will we stroll dreaming of the lost America, of love past blue automobiles and driveways, home to our silent cottage? Ah, dear father, gray beard, lonely old courage teacher, what America did you have when Charon quit poling his ferry and you got out on a smoking bank and stood watching the boat disappear on the black waters of Lethe? Berkeley, 1955.
Nice. That had a good, that had a nice energy to it.
Oh, yeah.
Whitman-esque.
I love that poem.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Who killed the pork chops?
Great what line. Price avocados?
What price avocados? Well, that's a wonderful segue. Thank you, Ben. That was lovely readings.
You're welcome.
And that's the sort of the highbrow part of our program this evening. And we will descend rapidly, but not too rapidly. So we will go from that to two parodies of what many people consider one of America's greatest lyricists and poets, Bob Dylan. So we're going to hear a couple of Bob Dylan songs, not they're parodies, obviously.
Right.
And each of them has their own particular magic.
Let's
first
hear it.
One is Polka Dot Undies.
Well, I went for a drive in my pickup truck. I picked up my girl 'cause I wanted to show her my gloves, 'cause she had on her mitts, and I blushed brightly when she showed me her perfume that she buys whenever Avon calls. So I took off my pants and I showed her my polka dot undies, my polka dot undies. My polka dot undies from Miracle Mart. I said, look, be careful, I think I'm gonna turn a sharp corner and go up on the grass. She leaned out the window and I thought I saw her pointing to something that flashed by real quick. She said, hey, look at that, it looks just like your polka dot undies, polka dot undies. My polka dot undies that I wear back to front. She smiled and she said, have you seen my brother's new car? I'm the one that he stole. Then she asked me to look up her whole damn family, and I went into shock when I found out it was her sister who really liked polka dot undies, polka dot undies. And chips, and he still sucked his thumb. I said, I don't mind, and she kissed me on my polka dot undies, my polka dot undies. I kissed her softly and I said, I'll tell you what, let's roll up the windows
Hudson, I'll eat your last bar of chocolate, the one that's in the parcel. She said, no, 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 and she called me a taxi. And I said, I beg your pardon for getting home real fast before I lose my polka dot undies. Polka dot undies. The moral of the story, like a jewel, it is gleaming, but you'll never find it in a glass of warm milk or tea, cause it will not fit, and you probably already think I am full of fake innuendos and double-meaning rhymes, but I'll tell you that obscenity is all in your polka-dot undies, your polka-dot undies.
Well, that brought it down real fast. I love it. This is the absolute filthiest song. Mm-hmm. It does not curse, or you know,
it's kind of a brilliant send up of Bob Dylan's, you know, like some of his favorite like songwriting, you know, tricks.
Oh, totally.
You know, of setting up the expected rhyme and then denying it.
Yeah. And that's it. And you have to understand that very well. So this next Dylan parody comes from the film The Walk Hard with John C. Reilly.
Right.
And this actually captures a completely different phase of
I'm
Dylan's.
I'm looking forward to hearing it. I haven't seen this movie.
So this is Royal Jelly sung by John C. Reilly.
Mailboxes drip like lampposts in the twisted birth canal of the Coliseum. Rimjob fairy teapots mask the temper tantrum. Oh, say, can you see 'em? Stuffed cabbage is the darling of the laundromat. And the sorority mascot sat with the lumberjack. Pressing, passing, stinging half-synthetic fabrications of his time. The mouse with the overbite explain how the rabbits were ensnared. In the skinny, scanny self-thrash, the apothecary diplomat inside the three-eyed monkey within inches of his toaster oven life. In my mind, I'm half blind, my inner ref is mostly deaf, I'm smell impaired, if you care. My sense of taste is wasted on the phosphorescent orange peels of San Francisco axe-encrusted frenzy. So let me touch you, let me touch you, let me touch you, let me touch you, where the royal jelly gets made. Cholera tourist singers bringing weeds and social clingers, hangers on and fancy flingers to the dress ball. Mushrooms and bowling pins, stovepipe hats and other things I can't recall from juvenile hall. We're so unlucky and stuff. Woodrow Wilson never had it so tough. Dairy Queen and Vaseline and Maybelline, Paul Bunyan and James Dean. Allegory agencies of Pre-Raphaelite paganry and Shenandoah tapestries compared with good mahogany, collapsing the undying postcard romance. the feline perspicacity by the university. That night I held a paucity, which you deemed common courtesy. I wasn't what you thought I'd be. I shouldn't have invited you to dance in my tree. I'm halfway free, and in my chair, one quarter there. In my dream, 1/16 cream. In the coffee of the courtier, of the sycophantic assistant to the king. So let me touch you, let me touch you, let me touch you, let me touch you with a roar.
That was really funny.
Yeah.
You know, that song could be on Highway 61 Revisited, and it wouldn't sound out of place.
Yeah. There's so many really great lines in the actual movie. They cut it in half, but like,
yeah,
it's just interesting to see how far they can go with it. And right. I think the problem is that like. They actually almost start making sense at some point.
Right. Yeah.
And then I think they had to go, no, this is starting to like actually have a narrative or something. We gotta like chop it up and quit.
Yeah. Well, I mean like every Dylan song has at least one incredibly stupid lyric in it. Some of my favorite Dylan lyrics are "The beach was deserted except for some kelp." You usually don't count the kelp. I'd say that's a deserted beach.
there's a real interesting if you look at like All Along the Watchtower. So mm-hmm. I had cause recently to sort of dig into that a little bit, and it's one of Dylan's most covered songs.
Well, I mean, but
Hendrix's version.
Hendrix made a brilliant work of art out of that song,
but. And in a case of the just ultimate sour grapes is like Dave Von Ronk was uh-huh. like totally hates that song, and uh-huh. he, in an interview he said like Dylan succumbed to sort of the lure of people thinking he was a poet,
right,
and just started throwing down things, and he like critiqued mm-hmm. like the line, you know, line by line, like. Mm-hmm. A watchtower, you can't be all along it. It's a thing. It's, you know?
He's not wrong.
No, he's not wrong. But, you know, but then how many people know Dave Von Ronk?
Well,
how many people know Dylan? Well, yeah.
Dave Von Ronk was kind of, for a little while, Dylan's, the very, like, before his career took off, was kind of like his older brother figure in the like, Greenwich Village mm-hmm. folk scene.
Well, he's sort of the inspiration for the...
That Coen Brothers movie.
The Coen Brothers movie. Right. Deep Inside Llewyn Davis.
Right, yeah.
So, anyway, those were a couple of my favorite Dylan parody songs.
And Dylan himself, like the very beginnings of his career, he was basically just doing homages to Woody Guthrie.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's fake it till you make it, and you know, great writers steal, good writers borrow, or flip that.
Right.
But we're at an interesting time now where, like I said, people want authenticity, but mm-hmm. it always goes back to, like, what is truly authentic? What is...
Right.
There's nothing stands alone, right?
No,
we are all part of a continuum. We're all in this ecosystem.
Authenticity is a
boogeyman.
A golden calf, you know. Like,
it is.
Like, most, authenticity, I think... I have a good friend who's a great artist who said something along the lines of... he said that authenticity or novelty... or originality are qualities in a work of art that you hear most often praised by people who have very little experience with actually making art. They said that people, who know what it's like to do it, know that, you know, if it doesn't come to you in a dream, probably nothing's truly original. You know, and if you think about a truly authentic Italian restaurant, they wouldn't have tomatoes because they got that from the Colombian exchange, and they wouldn't have pasta because Marco Polo brought that over from China, you know.
Yeah, it'd just be like sand.
Yeah. It would be like rotting boar meat and grapes.
Yeah, well, you know, or that garum, right?
Right,
that,
salt.
That fermented fish paste that they
right.
have to put
yeah.
on everything. Which, you know, don't knock it till you try it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we're gonna move on to a Tom Lehrer, one of my favorite satirists. It was tough kind of picking out songs for this because a lot of this stuff, like, I can't get a Drake parody if there is one. I know that there was sort of a...
Well, you should listen to a Drake song and then listen to this song. I guess you can't get it anymore.
I can't. Well, but I don't know if it was a parody or a forgery, right, which is different.
Yeah.
A lot of this stuff mm-hmm. is just going to be lost on anybody under the age of 40.
I think it's more of a forgery, you know, because like, have you ever seen F is for Fake, that documentary Orson Welles made in the 70s? It was about this guy who was an incredible forger of paintings.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that he would make a copy of a famous Picasso or whatever. He would make a Picasso that didn't exist.
Right.
And he was so good at mimicking the style. Of, he would just be like, what, you want a late Matisse? Here you go.
Right.
He would cook it up in an afternoon. And he lived in this island in Greece that he couldn't leave because most European countries had revoked his passport.
Well, but I mean, but here, and here this guy was like a criminal. And,
right.
And now we have, we have apps that can do that,
right.
You know, with just a bunch of prompts, you know, it's kind of, I'm gonna miss mm-hmm. when all parodies and everything is done taken over by a computer. But until that point, we're gonna throw real old school Tom Lehrer's Irish ballad
right.
Out there. I'm gonna do it in English, mm-hmm. and then just because I came across it.
One of the more important aspects of public folk singing is audience participation. And this happens to be a good song for group singing. So if any of you feel like joining in with me on this song, I'd appreciate it if you would leave right now. About a maid, I'll sing a song, sing rickety-tickety-tin. About a maid, I'll sing a song, who didn't have her family long. Not only did she do them wrong, she did every one of them in. She did every one of them in. One morning in a fit of pique, sing rickety-tickety-tin. One morning in a fit of pique, she drowned her father in the creek. The water tasted bad for a week, and we had to make do with gin. With gin, we had to make do with gin. Her mother, she could never stand, sing rickety-tickety-tin. Her mother, she could never stand, and so a cyanide soup she planned. The mother died with a spoon in her hand, and her face in a hideous grin. Her face in a hideous grin. She set her sister's hair on fire, rickety-tickety-tin. She set her sister's hair on fire, and as the smoke and flame rose higher, danced around the funeral pyre, playing a violin, olin, playing a violin. She weighted her brother down with stones, rickety-tickety-tin. She weighted her brother down with stones and sent him off to Davy Jones. All they ever found were some bones and occasional pieces of skin, of skin. Occasional pieces of skin. One day when she had nothing to do, sing rickety-tickety-tin. One day when she had nothing to do, she cut her baby brother in two and served him up as an Irish stew. And invited the neighbors in, neighbors in. Invited the neighbors in. And when at last the police came by, sing rickety-tickety-tin. And when at last the police came by, her little pranks she did not deny. To do so she would have had to lie.
And lying she knew was a sin, a sin. Lying she knew was a sin. My tragic tale I won't prolong, rickety-tickety-tin. My tragic tale I won't prolong, and if you do not enjoy my song, you've yourselves to blame if it's too long. You should never have let me begin, begin. You should never have let me begin.
Ich sing ein Lied von einer Maid, rickety tickety tin. Ich sing ein Lied von einer Maid, die war bereits nach kurzer Zeit ihre ganze Sippe leid. Ja, sie machte sie alle hin, le hin. Ja, sie machte sie alle hin. Eines Tages im Wutanfall, rickety tickety tin. Eines Tages im Wutanfall, as
I think like parody songs is a really great way to learn German.
Is that second one, was it for a German audience?
I hope so.
Yeah, I mean,
I mean, it would be a disaster if it wasn't.
Like,
right?
Did Tom Lehrer also know German and he, you know, performed?
Oh no,
German?
No, no. This was.
Oh, that was a German.
That was a
German
Felix,
singer,
Felix Genosa.
That was a German
doing,
singer singing I think a translation.
He's sort of the German Tom Lehrer.
Right.
You know, he does Tom Lehrer in German for Germans.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do Germans find that as funny as English speakers? I wonder. Like, because English speakers, you know, we what does an Irish ballad in English sound like to a German speaker?
Well, exactly that.
Yeah. Well, yeah but you know what I'm trying to ask.
I do. I think. You know, I don't want to just sort of generalize.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, I do actually. I'm going to generalize.
Go for
and
it.
That, Germans actually, from my experience living in Ireland. Germans have a weird affinity for Ireland.
That's interesting.
I feel like it's a relatively safe country,
right?
Safe,
uh-huh.
But they also have a healthy disrespect for law and order, which right. The Germans on holiday find refreshing.
Ah, okay, that makes sense.
So and German like Irish pubs in Germany are huge, and
really
popular. Yeah, the singing. Well, you know, yeah, and they both the cultures have sort of singing as part of their pub culture.
Right, yeah.
You know, but I don't know, I just came across that song as I was looking for mm-hmm. parodies. And
well, it's something that Tom Lehrer noticed about a lot of, you know, murder ballads, like, you know, is that they often contain what seems to me to be glaring logical holes. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, in The Long Black Veil, you know, it goes, the judge said, "Son, what is your alibi? If you were somewhere else, then you don't have to die. I spoke not a word, though it meant my life. I'd been in the arms of my best friend's wife." And whenever I hear that song, I'm like, can't you just say you were somewhere else? Like, you can.
Well, no, because lying is a sin. Like,
right.
Like, that's the thing. I have, like, don't, like, I'm not allowed to, when we play that song, I have a real moral objection to that song because, all right, it's okay to cheat on your best friend, right, with his wife,
right?
You know, but that also means then that there's some killer,
the real murderer is going free,
has like not, you know, you're
right,
you know, but it's sort of put up as sort of this sort of noble sacrifice for love,
right?
You know, terrible, horrible, horrible song. So we're gonna roll into sort of the just a very easy genre to parody, the folk song,
right?
And I feel like this also, Tom Lehrer. One more Tom Lehrer song for this one, but I feel like this one sort of drifts into satire, not just parody, because he is sort of poking fun at the self-righteous attitude of the people who like believe fervently in this sort of genre, and it strikes me a little bit there are some echoes perhaps to some certain stridency in the youth throughout all generations.
Well, you know, that movie, A Mighty Wind, is kind of what I recently I recently read a biography of Alan Lomax, and it was in this big kick where I was listening to a lot of interviews with Alan Lomax and so on, and someone asked him about the folk craze in Greenwich Village in the late 50s and early 60s that Dave Von Ronk and Bob Dylan Joan Baez came out of, which is parody in A Mighty Wind.
Yeah, and that's for, you know,
And he said basically, like, you know, that he'd spent his whole life recording the real thing, and here were all of these nice college kids in Greenwich Village singing these songs. And he said, like, well, I understand why they love the music, and I love it too, but it was, when they sang it, it was missing a little something. Like, you could tell that it doesn't sound the same with these songs were sung by actual coal miners, you know.
Right.
There was
right.
They didn't have anything at stake.
Well, we're gonna come up with three sort of parodies of folk musics. Tom Lehrer's The Folk Song Army, which I don't know if you're familiar with that one.
I have not heard it.
Oh, okay. And then Blood on the Coal by the Folksmen from A Mighty Wind, which is about a train wreck and a coal mine disaster at the same time.
Right.
And then Let Me Hold You, Little Man, which is sort of a protest song in solidarity with the short people.
Literal little men.
Little men. Like, I don't know what the and it's, I debated putting this on because it's kind of coarse, but it also, because it is satire and is sort of poking fun at people who take up causes they really have no, you know, let's say, skin in that game.
Right.
And for whatever their own personal reasons. So here's a few folk music parodies and a little bit of satire. First up, Tom Lehrer.
One type of song that has come into increasing prominence in recent months is the folk song of protest. You have to admire people who sing these songs. It takes a certain amount of courage to get up in a coffee house or a college auditorium and come out in favor of the things that everybody else in the audience is against, like peace and justice and brotherhood and so on. But the nicest thing about a protest song is that it makes you feel so good. I have a song here which I realize should be accompanied on a folk instrument, in which category the piano does not, alas, qualify. So imagine, if you will, that I am playing an 88-string guitar. We are the folk song army. Every one of us cares. We all hate poverty, war, and injustice, unlike the rest of you squares. There are innocuous folk songs, yeah, but we regard them with scorn. The folks who sing them have no social conscience. Why, they don't even care if Jimmy cracked corn. If you feel dissatisfaction, strum your frustrations away. Some people may prefer action, but give me a folk song any old day. The tune don't have to be clever, and it don't matter if you put a couple extra syllables into a line. It sounds more ethnic if it ain't good English, and it don't even gotta rhyme. Excuse me, rhyme. Remember the war against Franco? That's the kind where each of us belongs. Though he may have won all the battles, we had all the good songs. So join in the folk song army. Guitars are the weapons we bring to the fight against poverty, war, and injustice. Ready, aim, sing.
It was April 27th in the year of 91, about a mile below the surface and the warm Kentucky sun. The late shift was ending and the early shift was late, and the foreman ate his dinner from a dirty tin plate. Blood on the tracks, blood in the mine. Brothers and sisters, what a terrible time. Oh, 97 went in the wrong hole. Now in my number 60, there's blood on the coal.
Blood on the coal. pits were steaming, it was 7:25. Every miner worked the coal face, every one of them alive. The train came round the corner, you could hear the trestle groan. But the switcher wasn't listening, so he left the switch alone. Blood on the tracks, blood in the mine. Brothers and sisters, what a terrible time. Old 97 went in the wrong hole. Now in line number 60, there's blood on the coal. Well, the walls began to tremble, and the men began to yell. They could hear that lonesome whistle like an echo out of a well. They dropped their picks and shovels as to safety they did run, for to stay amongst the living in the year of 91. Blood on the tracks, blood in the mine. Brothers and sisters, what a terrible time. Old 97 went in the wrong hole. Now in my number 60, there's blood on the coal.
Blood on the coal.
Now an Irishman named Murphy said, "I'll stop that iron horse," as he stood athwart its passage, and it crushed him dead, of course. And I hope he hears the irony whene'er this tale is told, that the train that took his life was burning good Kentucky coal.
Hey!
Blood on the tracks, blood in the mine. Brothers and sisters, what a terrible time.
Old
97 got in the wrong hole. Now in my number 60, there's blood on the coal.
All right, so that was a couple of folk song parodies. That last one by from the Mighty Wind is indistinguishable from a lot of those the particular genre of folk music.
The
tragic song, the shipwreck song, or the train wreck songs.
Right, and it was I don't remember the actor who sings that, but. You know, his voice sounds, you know, a lot like was it Bob Weir or Jerry Garcia who sang "Hey Ho the Dario"? Yeah.
Oh gosh, I don't know about.
It sounds
that.
A lot like it though.
Yeah, no, and they're such fabulous musicians. So this next one, it's short, it's painful, it is a satire.
Oh,
so
wait.
Keep that in mind. Yeah, we got one more folk parody.
Wait, before you do.
Yes, yes.
Do you want to hear a fun vocabulary word that I was reminded of by the last song?
Yes.
What is a pharaoh equinologist?
Someone who studies railroads.
Yes.
Yeah.
An iron horseologist.
Iron horse, yeah.
Yeah, that's a word. Pharaoh equinologist.
A pharaoh equinologist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Drop that into your conversations.
I'll work it in sometime this week. Yeah. I mean, half the words I use, most of my students don't understand.
Yeah. They're normal words.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Okay. Let me hold you. Here's a parody and a satire.
All the elevator buttons, so incredibly high. I stand today for the midget, half the size of a regular guy. Let me hold you, little man, as the parade passes by. Let me hold you, little man, we'll make believe you can fly. You shout for me to put you down, but I'm marching today for your cause. I'm banging the drum, your big day will come when they remake the Wizard of Oz. So let me hold you, midget man, pretend that you're flying in space. Let me hold you, midget man, so the dog will stop licking your face. Little shoes, little pants, little song, little dance, little heart, little mind, but your rights are as big as mine. Na 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 na. Thank God I am tall, I won't let you fall, we're all midgets for one and for all. Thank God I am tall, I won't let you fall, we're all midgets and some are just small. Stand up for the little people!
Yeah, probably shouldn't have said that one. But
No. I mean, Randy Newman's Short People is
a that's
natural
true
companion
to that.
That's true,
too. But yeah, it's context. I think context makes a difference between parody, certainly satire. Without it said. This next one, I don't know if you're familiar with Stan Freberg.
I am not.
You're not. So Stan Freberg, you know, in the 60s, you know, the early 60s, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of change, a lot of turbulence. And so Stan Freberg, he put out these comedy albums. Comedy albums were really huge. And and this new music was coming in, you know, and it was just ripe for mockery, right? I remember when hip hop came in, Johnny Carson mocked it.
Right.
Because people don't understand it, and it's just like, oh, this is weird, and the kids are doing it, and everything like that.
Right.
So we're gonna. This is like a way, way, way back machine sort of song, where it's sort of Stan Freberg mocking. I think this is just mockery of early.
There's no love in it.
I don't know. You tell me.
Okay.
You tell me.
I'll be the judge.
Okay.
Oh yes, I'm the great pretender. Pretend that I'm doing well. But just a moment, please. You on the piano? What are you doing?
Well, man, I just play little ooh-baba-doo, like ooh-ba-ba, ooh-ba-ba. See, I think it's a mistake on my part. I got the same chord over and over, like clink, 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 clink.
That's right. That's right.
You want me to play the same thing all through the song?
You catch on fast.
Wow.
My need is such, I pretend too much. I'm lonely, but no one can tell.
Man, you scared me. Don't do that.
Oh, yes, I'm the great pretender. Conceal. Oh, yes, I am the great pretender. Just laughing and gay like a clown.
My hand is falling off, man.
I seem to be what I'm not, you see. I'm wearing my heart like a crown.
Wow, what a drag.
Pretending that you're still around. But just a moment! Just a moment, please!
I thought you were through, man.
No, no!
I don't want to play that lick no more, man. I come from a different school, like Shearing, Eric Garner style. Dig, man. Ooh, ba, ooh, be,
hold
ah,
it!
Ooh, be, ah,
that's ooh, not going to sell the records!
But man, don't bug me. I don't want to play that cling, cling, cling jazz.
You play that cling, cling, cling jazz? Well, you won't get paid tonight. Well, all right! To reel is this feeling of make-believe. To reel when I feel what my heart can't conceal. Oh, yes,
great. You see how lovely that turned out now? That's a darling part. Appreciate it. And gay like a clown. I seem, hold it. I seem, slow down. I seem, retard.
Don't stop me now, man. I got to where I like it.
Stop it. Stop it, I say. I'm getting out of here. He ruined the ending. One of the loveliest parts in the whole... piece.
The whole piece.
Well, you know, the thing about satire or mockery, you know, Juvenalian satire,
mm-hmm.
I'd say, is mm-hmm. that... this is something that I tell my writing students whenever somebody, you know, tries to write a piece of Juvenalian satire, which I appreciate because, you know, they don't, it's not something that college kids attempt very often, but I understand the spirit of it. But the problem with Juvenalian satire is that you're coming from a position that requires you to be smarter than whatever it is that you're mocking. You have to be sure that you're smarter than what you're mocking, because if you're not, your satire will not age very well at all.
And you feeling that did not age very well?
No, no.
Well, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's kind of like that particular character that they were sort of mocking. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was African American or black. And then and I started thinking, well, a really potent vein of American music mm-hmm. was minstrel music,
right?
And that was like parody, but also homage, and the birth of like American music.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
in
like
a twisted way.
From the most part, what they would sing at minstrel shows were actual black folk songs.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
maybe they were singing parodies also. But.
Well, they would come up with other songs and stuff, you know. Up until, you know, the 40s, 50s, like that stuff was very acceptable. And I think I listened to this again, and I mean, I grew up listening to this. My dad listened to this, I'm like, man, I don't know. It's a little borderline, and it's also not terribly funny anymore.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I have trouble imagining it was funny at the time.
Oh, it was hilarious at the time. I mean, there was a whole lot going on. You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I don't. It's kind of strange when you look at stuff. From the, you know, 50s and early 60s, that was like funny. That there, you know, like an Ed Sullivan monologue is just kind of baffles me mostly. That like people found this funny at the time, but then you see like a modern comic like Lenny Bruce just like in, you know, on the Ed Sullivan show or something, and it's just kind of amazing. It's
These people were in the vanguard. Yeah, it was not a difficult time to rise above the,
middle brow. Seeing Lenny Bruce on the Ed Sullivan show looks like a comic from now, like transported back in time.
Yeah.
He was ahead
of his time.
He was.
So gosh, we're almost out of time, Ben. This was so much fun. I have so many more parodies and satires.
It was a blast, as always.
Shall we go with... we can't do a parody show without Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, right. I mean, I think you should go put on Amish Paradise if you haven't.
Oh, I think we do. Here we go.
A parody of a theft.
A parody of an homage.
Yeah, it's more of an homage.
As I walk through the valley where I harvest my grain, I take a look at my wife and realize she's very plain. But that's just perfect for an Amish like me. You know I shun fancy things like electricity. At 4:30 in the morning, I'm milking cows. Jebediah feeds the chickens and Jacob plows. Fool, and I've been milking and plowing so long that even Ezekiel thinks that my mind is gone. I'm a man of the land, I'm into discipline. Got a Bible in my hand and a beard on my chin. But if I finish all of my chores and you finish thine, then tonight we're gonna party like it's 1699. We've been spending most our lives living in an Amish paradise. A churn butter once or twice, living in an Amish paradise. It's hard work and sacrifice, living in an Amish paradise. We sell quilts at dinner. me in the butt last week. I just smiled at him and I turned the other cheek. I really don't care, in fact I wish him well, 'cause I'll be laughing my head off when he's burning in hell. But I ain't never punched a tourist, even if he deserved it. An Amish with a tool, you know that's unheard of. I never wear buttons, but I got a cool hat, and my homies agree I really look good.